fear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
This call is being recorded.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself and Buster delighted to welcome along a debutant from the good old US of A, Richard Foy, known to many of you as Rico. Rico, we're delighted to have you on, mate.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we've got a lot to look back on, a busy but disappointing week in which Motherwell exited the Betfred League Cup, also lost in the league to Kilmarnock. We've got a game to look forward to, Livingston at home next weekend, and also join the debate on the controversial scheduling of the Betfred Cup semi-finals. Buster, I'll start with yourself, given you were at the game yesterday. A defeat to Killy, and possibly the worst performance of the three successive defeats in the space of 7 days. There was a few turning points, I suppose. You go ahead, Curtis Main misses a penalty, and the game completely changed. Killy, from that point onwards, absolutely dominated, very deserving of the 3 points. And I guess we are now beginning to worry. The panic buttons weren't being hit following the Aberdeen defeat last week, but this has been a very disappointing week, and there's no getting away from the fact that we're in poor form.
Yeah, Kilmarnock's always a difficult place to go, but, you know, as you say, we unexpectedly took the lead. I don't think we were great, but we definitely weren't terrible. It was a decent enough start. Good goal, well taken by Curtis Main. And then, as you say, a really poor penalty. It was the exact same penalty they'd hit the game before against Hearts, only this time the goalkeeper didn't jump out of the way. It was right in the middle of the goals, basically, just about. And from there, as you say, Kilmarnock seemed bolstered by that. You know, their fans got behind them. That's what happens, you know, when your team save a penalty, or the opposition miss, at least. You know, you pick up a bit of confidence here. And to be honest with you, between us defending pretty poorly and them coming at us, you know, they went to town on us, and it was easy for them for there.
Rico, it's hard to know how we pick ourselves up from this. We kind of see the post-match interviews with the players, and I think it's almost becoming somewhat of a broken record, saying the same things. It's a good changing room. We'll pick ourselves up. We'll go again. But you can only say that so many times before. It's just spin. It's just trying to put a positive light. And what is a difficult run of form? Yes, we've had difficult games, and yes, we keep on saying there's an easier run of fixtures, or a supposed easier run of fixtures to come, but yeah, it's hard to be confident we can win any of these games.
It is for me. Obviously, I'm on the kind of outside at the moment looking in. I don't get to see any live games, so I'm basing my kind of current knowledge on whether it's highlights or whether it's kind of interviews, mostly going from social media. So it's difficult to see, obviously, minute by minute what's happening. From the outside looking in, I feel as if, especially on Saturday, I tweeted about this, I felt sorry for Stephen Robinson purely because there are little things that's going against us just now. If Main scores the penalty and we go 2-0 up, for me, you go on and win the game. There's no excuse for a player to miss a penalty and then it falls back on then, oh, well, Robinson should have done this, Robinson should have done that. For me, at that point, he's relying on that player to step up, put the ball in the net, and give us the 2-goal lead that you would be relatively confident in seeing the game out from there. I think the difficult issues then happen when we don't take those chances, we then put pressure on ourselves. And you both know that defensively, we've not been great. So for me, going in past games as well, we've went 1-0 down, and at the moment it's looking as if as soon as the game goes 1-0, it's kind of panic stations. We don't seem to have a plan B to get back into a game. So for me, when you go 1-0 up, you need to go on and win that game. Like, that's it's that's what you're basing your plan A on, taking the lead in the game, being defensively strong, winning your 50-50 battles, playing percentages, as they keep liking to phrase it. So it's about trying to get into the opposition half, get balls up, play off the second ball. But on Saturday, it sounds as if that even at 1-0 up, and even if the penalty had went in, it's kind of sounding like we would have allowed Kilmarnock to get back into the game, similarly to what happened at Hearts the few days previous.
Buster, interesting quotes from Stephen Robinson following the match, including that he believes he's been too loyal to some players. Where would you expect the changes to be made in the team? He's clearly unhappy at a few of the regulars, and I think there's no getting away from the fact that there are guys in the team just now that are underperforming, possibly lacking in confidence somewhat as well. Would you expect to see wholesale changes next week?
I don't really know, you know, who or what he would change, to be fair, because he seems to be generally stuck in his, you know, we have to play three centre-halves. ATS has come in there and played left wing-back out of nowhere. You know, he wasn't getting a look in, basically, when it was Cadden and Tate. Tate constantly going in there, you know, his wrong side. Although, you know, he can play and fill in there, does well there, basically. But, you know, ATS came in there out of nowhere, basically. Who do we think he's talking about when he says, you know, he's been too kind to the regulars? Because, you know, he sat Cadden out. Cadden was having a tough time. He sat him out. He came back in at the weekend. He was in at midfield. You know, we've got quite a lot of midfielders in the team, but the regulars, Andy Rose, Alan Campbell, they are missing, you know, through injury at the moment. Or I don't even know what Campbell's excuse was. Sorry, I take it he was injured. The only other person I can think of that, or the only people I can think of, sorry, that he's, you know, talking about is maybe Carol McHugh and Curtis Main. I don't think there's much else you can really change in that team, to be fair. So I think come Saturday you might see Bowman and Johnson up front. I don't really know who would fill in for, you know, at the back, basically, at the moment, and again, due to injuries. And although, as much as I hate to say it as well, Richard Tate, for their equaliser, Richard Tate was absolutely shocking. The boy showed no intention of going anywhere other than inside, and he showed him inside something awful. And, you know, Carson made a semi-decent save there. ATS could have been accused of sort of daydreaming at the back post as well. He sort of turned his body to clear it with his left foot, whereas he probably should have went across it with his right foot. But by that time, the boy had nipped in and scored. So I don't know who or what the changes would be. And again, is that going to be personnel changes? Is it going to be, you know, tactical changes as well? I think we will see one or two changes, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was sort of, you know, 90% what we're used to.
Rico, an interesting week for Curtis Main, having scored the opening goal at Tynecastle in the cup game. He then scores a very good goal yesterday, followed up by missing a penalty 10 minutes later. So a player that I felt was lacking confidence has scored in successive games and then possibly given himself somewhat of a setback by missing that penalty. Yeah. He's a player that seems to be very confidence-driven. If his head's down, then he's basically a man down. He doesn't do enough and doesn't contribute enough when he's feeling a wee bit sorry for himself. Maybe that's a slightly harsh assessment, but it'll be interesting to see whether Danny Johnson now is brought back into the starting 11 in place of Curtis Main.
Yeah, for me, I think Danny Johnson's probably been a little bit hard done by, if I'm honest, not being in the squad on Saturday. Sorry, not the squad, the starting 11 on Saturday. I feel, again, from kind of what I've seen, he offers something a little bit different to the usual launch high balls up, hope to win a second ball and play off. I feel as if he's kind of got that natural goal scorer instinct. My thoughts were exactly the same as when that penalty was missed. It's a case of, has that shattered his confidence again? Is he back to a kind of case of needing a couple of goals? He's obviously got the couple of goals, but the penalty miss then kind of takes him back a step. I think what was noticeable for me was, for the first time probably this season, the players in the post-match interview, along with Robbo in the post-match interview, for the first time they looked a little bit as if they were stressed and they were short of confidence. And I feel as if it's probably the first time they've come out and gave an honest assessment. I know we've spoken previously about the small margins between the Aberdeen defeat, the Hearts defeat. And granted, there are small margins and probably the penalty was another one. But for me, like I said to you, it's we can't continue with these small margins. And I think for the first time in a couple of weeks, there was probably a little bit of honesty there in terms of these next three games are absolutely massive for us. We need to initially get points on the board because we're looking now, you see where Livingston are through their picking up of points. Dundee obviously winning at the weekend as well could potentially give them a little boost. So you feel as well that the likes of St Mirren and St Johnstone are always going to pick up points. And I still feel that we'll maybe look back in a month's time and think we didn't really have much to worry about. I still believe that we will turn it around and we aren't far away from getting these kind of results right. But it's definitely kind of worrying that it looks like a confidence thing, and I feel as if we do have a lot of confidence players, like you say, Curtis Main. I feel Cads at times can be a confidence player. Once he gets past a player, once you know he's going to do it the full game. Bowman obviously getting his goal during the week. Salmon started the season well, albeit against weaker opposition. And I think a lot of these kind of players, that when they are playing well, they're very, very difficult to manage in a game in terms of opposition managing them. They put themselves about, they win challenges, they'll put pressure on players. When things aren't going so well and when you probably need them to put that work in, we seem to kind of drop off a little bit. And I always think back to the Aberdeen Cup game last season with the high intensity that we played with, and it just caused them so many problems. And I feel like as if at the moment, that basic instinct of working hard and chasing things down and playing with a high intensity just seems to be missing at the moment.
Buster, it's very knee-jerk, but there is a wee bit of a clamour on social media. I wouldn't, in fact, personally not go as far as a clamour, but suggestions that the time is up for the manager. I think that's pretty ridiculous, to be perfectly honest. But we have mentioned in the past the style of play isn't the most easy in the eye, but it's okay when it's breeding results. At the moment, we're sticking to our usual style, but we're not getting the results. So it's kind of natural, I guess, that the manager is going to come in for a wee bit of stick.
Yeah, I think you're right. Obviously, when you know when we're winning or when we're doing well, whether it be you know cups or cup competitions, because our league record of the last year or so has been pretty abysmal. But you know the cups are quite rightly included in the records, and you know when we're getting to semis and finals, you know it's fantastic. And as you say, we sort of look past it. It might not be the most attractive way to play football. And I'm not suggesting that we should be you know Barcelona style passing or anything, because I actually quite enjoy us, you know, being that wee bit physical and having that sort of graft in there, and the hustle and bustle is, I really enjoy it, to be honest with you, because when it worked for us, it worked fantastically. And I think as Rico just says it, I think you know that we don't really seem to have that anymore. You know that there doesn't appear to be any sort of closing down or pressure on people. You know, centre halves and things like that when they've got the ball. I think Hearts there midweek, you know, with two strikers, Main and Bowman, sort of went either side, you know, spread the Hearts' three centre halves out. But any time, you know, then it went towards the ball, it just dragged, I think it was Biggie, it just dragged Biggie back up there as well, because they were just knocking it a bit amongst themselves. And you know, again, there's no emphasis on the hustle and bustle this season, and I think that's what's annoying me about that most. But to suggest that you know Robinson should be sacked or is near getting the sack is miles out, so in my opinion, just now. I think again, as Rico just says there, I think there's a point where it comes where you know if we pick up start picking up a couple of points, we'll look back and we'll say, ah, what were we worried about? But I think right now we're on a pivot here where if we don't start picking up points soon, we could just end up free falling. You know, again, as Rico says, Dundee there starts, they've got their first win. Everybody has been really surprised by Livy, and you know, them getting a win at home to Rangers today certainly doesn't help in the long run. In our case, if they're going to drop down besides us, but to suggest that Robinson should be on his way at the door already is a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a farce, and it's the usual names that you see who have been claiming it since the moment he got the job. That they're the ones who are shouting that at the moment. It's when the neutral, the people who are level-headed, shall we say, start wondering or start shouting for him to get his jaws. That's when we need to start really thinking about it. You know, is it time for him to change things up or go, basically?
And yesterday's defeat basically just compounded what has been a very difficult week. We also exited the Betfred League Cup at the quarter-final stage at Tynecastle on Wednesday night. Rico, you'll have had a chance to see the goals back. Now, individual errors, very, very costly. Losing goals at poor times as well. You could have went in to half-time 1-0 up. Gael Big-Romana dwells in the ball. He had two or three attempts, or opportunities at least, to clear. He didn't manage to do so. Stephen McLean eventually puts the ball in the net for 1-1. Poor start to the second half as well. Almost as if we were playing for a point. We were sitting in that deep. Hearts got deservedly back in front before Ryan Bowman's spectacular equaliser towards the death. Yet we still managed to go on and lose the game 4-2, so we lost two goals in the final couple of minutes. I don't think we can get too carried away with a defeat at Tynecastle, but the manner of it was very disappointing.
Yeah, I think, like you say, we're losing goals at kind of costly times. We seem to look to get ourselves into good positions in games, and at the moment we are shooting our foot just through individual errors. I think the biggie one's a difficult one because, granted, he's lost the ball in his own box and he has had a couple of opportunities to get rid of the ball. But as we all know, he's not the kind of player that's just going to kick the ball out the stand, into the stand, and get everyone back into position. He's the one that's the ball type player in the midfield. So that's what the fans have been clamouring for the past 5-6 weeks. So then they have a go at him for keeping the ball in that area. It seems a little bit kind of contradicting, albeit he definitely needs to realise there's pressure on him and know when to just play. And I think, like you say, individual errors in costly areas of the park and at costly times in the game is definitely affecting us just now. And again, like we say, the Curtis Main, if you go 2-0 up before the half time and you go in at half time with that lead, you're looking to see out the game. And it's the same with Hearts. Once you get ahead, you're looking to try and give yourself a little bit of breathing space and see out the next 15, 20 minutes, maybe into second half, and then see where it takes us. I feel as if when other teams go 1-0 up against us, that's the game done. We look as if we can't really get back into the game, and it's a lot of huffing and puffing to try and get that equaliser. And then when we go 1-0 up against other teams, we seem to gift teams goals, and I think that's the most frustrating part. We don't seem to make it difficult for other teams to peg goals back against us. We seem to give them up very easily. We need to realise, right, let's take this to full time and then we can regroup from there. But I think to push on and lose the ball in an area that then the ball comes into the box and we've got five players to their two or three and not one person's picked Ollie Lee up. Like, we've all just been watching the ball, and it's funny, I think from the outside looking in, it's very easy to see us just being very naive. We're not doing the things that we're good at, marking players, winning challenges, and it seems to be the basic stuff at the moment that's costing us. And it's basic decision making, giving the ball away in poor areas, not covering from each other. When if somebody does give the ball away, there's not a second player there to kind of mop up and help them out. Even going back to the Hearts game at home, where Carroll McHugh's given Hearts that goal. The Rangers game, you look back as well, we've given them goals rather than them earning it. The one where Carson's kind of had a flap at a Jarier's shot, and then even Lafferty's header, I feel as if we probably should have done better there. Like, we're losing simple goals that last season we didn't lose. And I don't know if it's too simplistic to turn around and say, well, we've sold Kipre, who was obviously one of our better kind of players and probably our best defender last year. And obviously Charles Dunn's out injured. I feel as if there's still enough experience there between Hartley and Aldred, even between the two of them. There's still enough experience in that back three, whether it's Maguire playing in there, whether it's ATS, whether it's Richard Tate or Cadden. There's enough experience within that back three or back five to be able to cut out these simple errors that we seem to be making at the moment.
There's a kind of phrase there, Buster, that came to mind, game management. We're not protecting leads very well. That's two successive games we've went ahead and not managed to even claim a point. Obviously, midweek being a cup game, but we lost it in the 90 minutes as well. That's pretty poor, and that's something that very much has to be addressed. It's all well and good saying when we go behind, we don't look like getting back into the game, but we're also losing games that we're going in front in as well.
But I think you're right there. I read somewhere in one of the forums, at the Hearts game, we should have, after we equalised, we should have sort of steadied the ship, get to extra time, and then you've also got that bonus substitute or whatever it is. You're the fourth substitute if your game goes to extra time. That's when you then start to make moves to win the game, considering how long there was left in the clock. But even at Hearts, to be honest with you, I felt there was only a 10-minute period where we played decently, and that was between the equaliser and before Hearts walked up the park and scored their third goal. That was the only time I thought we were playing any decent football. There was a wee bit of luck, and we could have scored a third goal. If it hadn't got caught between, I think it was John Suter's feet, and fell the right side of the goals for him. But I don't know what as Rico mentioned there. Kipre is gone. I think Charles Dunn's pace was a big part of that 3-man defence, and I think we're missing that quite a bit as well. But he also says, the players who are in there, they're experienced enough. I think some of their ability, they've got the ability as well. But maybe it's just the fact that I don't think they can maybe play a three with that personnel. I think we definitely need Dunn in there for his pace and his ability to cover, any sort of faster players, because there's no pace whatsoever basically in that back three at the moment. And I think that's costing us at times. But as you say, even then, we're looking really poor at times, just at the basics, daft mistakes, switching off, and I don't really know where it comes, how we improve that, basically.
Well, it's something that's definitely going to need to be addressed and soon. What looks like on paper, a decent opportunity to get back to form as a home game against Livingston next Saturday. But then there's not really much logic in my point there. You look at Livingston today, a fantastic win over Rangers. They're in brilliant form since Gary Holt took charge. This is going to be a very difficult one, Rico. And we've also got the situation with the fans getting slightly negative. You worry that if we were to fall behind, then the atmosphere can start to turn, and it could be a very difficult afternoon for both the players and the management team.
Yeah, I think what Livingston have done well is they've probably done what we done last season, and the fact that they seem to be very, very organised. Every player knows their role, they know what they should be doing in the park, and while that might seem very structured to some, it's considering who they've got on their team. I seen a tweet today, and it talks about where they've signed players from, and the list is like Airdrie, Dumbarton. I think they signed someone from Bowness. So the squad that they've got doesn't allow them to go out and try and outpass teams and outplay teams, and it's similar to what we had last season. They're very structured. They know what to do, when to do it. And I think Hawks obviously came in with a little bit of organisation that Kenny Miller couldn't give them. And it seems to be working really well just now. And I think that's what makes them really dangerous. I don't think they're going to be a team that will cause as many problems in terms of playing the ball on the deck. But I think it's going to be one of those games where if we don't get the early goal and the longer it goes 0-0, it is going to be a kind of case of fans potentially getting on players' back. And again, I think a lot of these teams are quite similar. I think ourselves, Livingston, Hearts and Aberdeen are what the kind of social media is now calling hammer throwers, which seems to be the term that's popular at the moment. But it's kind of true. It's just a lot of physical players who can play, but sometimes the systems don't allow them to play that. And I think at the moment, there's a lot of teams that are very, very good. Kilmarnock the same. When they go 1-0 up, they're very good at holding on to that lead and they don't really let much slip. So I think I can't see it being a high scoring game. And saying that, it wouldn't surprise me if we came out, turned it on and went and won 3-0, because I feel as if we've got that potential in us at the moment, that we do have a game plan that allows us to get balls in the box and get balls into dangerous areas. And I think once we see a little bit of success from it, the players definitely take confidence from that. And I think if you've got the right players in those kind of areas, then you're always going to create chances. It's just about, can we take those chances at one end while stopping other teams getting chances at the other? And I think we definitely miss Craig Tanner. I think he's been a huge loss in terms of creativity going forward. As I say, I feel as if Danny Johnson should probably be in the starting 11 just because of the finishes that he's had in games, and he seems to be in the right place at the right time. For me, I would have David Turnbull starting. Again, just to give us that little bit of creativity going forward. And it's not just a case of playing the high balls and looking to win the second ball, which I think now a lot of the teams have got used to as playing. And where last season Fir Park was seen as a bit of a fortress, we didn't lose many points at home. I can kind of see it going that way as well. And you only need to look at other teams' results against Livingston this season to realise it's going to be a very, very difficult game. And I think there's no point in underestimating how difficult it's going to be. The one thing that gives me a little bit of confidence is Robinson's already come out and highlighted how important these next three games are. So he's added that little bit of pressure onto the players, which will either turn out to be a positive or a negative. I think time will only tell. But I think he and the players realise how important it is to quickly get points on the board. And if you'd said to us at the start of the season, Livingston at home, you'd probably be looking at that as a guaranteed 3 points based on current form. It'll be interesting to see whether it is or not.
Yeah, I know we're just heading into October, Buster, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that the next three are pivotal. Livingston at home, followed by St Johnstone at home, and then we finish off October with a trip to St Mirren Park, or whatever it's called now, Simply Digital Arena. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. These are teams that are going to be in and around us. Ideally, we want them below us. And to do that, we're going to need to beat them. So starting with Livingston, it's absolutely imperative for me that we go there and we get the 3 points.
Yeah, and again, just to echo what Rico said there, the start of the season, based on who exactly you're seeing Livingston are picking up player-wise, you're thinking they're going straight back down. That's 3 points in the bag when it comes to that fixture. But, you know, they've started brilliantly. I think they've only been beat once in the league. I think they're sitting second or third than you as well, I'm not too sure. But it's going to be a lot harder than I initially thought it would be. And, you know, fair play to Livingston. I haven't seen much of them at all, to be honest with you. So I don't really know what to expect from them. But as you say, three home games in a trot here. I think it was the Celtic game. I was postponed for their semi final. I take it then, aye.
Yeah, it's only two home games in the trot. Then we're away to St Mirren to finish.
Oh, is that away? Sorry. My mistake, yeah. Sorry. You actually just said that to me at the start there, sorry. I don't know why I had it in my head it was at home, sorry, but you see the two home games at least, I think even Robinson will be thinking we need to pick up 6 points here. As you say, if we lose one of those games, especially if we lose to Livingston at home, coming up, I think, you know, there's going to be a wee bit of pressure on Robinson, and I think that's maybe when some people's opinions might change if that comes around, to be fair.
See, the success at Livingston, Rico, is this just a promotion bounce that they're having? Do you expect that they'll start to go backwards? I think after a few early results, everyone kind of thought, the time will come and they'll be down there, they'll end up towards the foot of the table, but it's shown no signs of ending this good form. And I suppose it's, if you continue to pick up the points, while you can't mathematically obviously keep yourself up with wins between August and December, you can go a long way to solidifying your place in the league.
Yeah, I think, and I still believe they will kind of fall a little bit. I can see them probably finishing maybe around 8th or 9th position, but I think, like I say, what they've done well is they've come up and they've used that promotion last season to continue with. And I think if Kenny Miller had stayed in the job, then you probably would have seen them down near the bottom. But Hulk's obviously come in and done a very good job at just getting them to do the basics right. And I think the danger that they might be in is that teams start to look at how they play and can either match that or they can figure out a way to beat them. And that's when they start dropping points, because ultimately they don't have the quality of, for me, the majority of the teams in the league. And I think that's one thing that I would always say about us. We do have the quality in the team, which I think is probably what annoys people the most, is that we have managed to keep the majority of our squad together based on a good two finals last season plus a 7th place finish. I think everyone was going into this season with high hopes and very optimistic that we could continue on that kind of upward trend and look to really make a push for that top six. I think the difficulty for us and Livingston will probably be this season is how strong the inverted commas the top five are. So I think Hibs, Hearts, Rangers, Celtic and Aberdeen will still probably finish in the top six, which always leaves one spot open, which I think for me, Kilmarnock are probably stronger than anyone else. So I think there's a clear divide between the top six and the bottom six this season. Obviously, I hoped we would have been in there. Probably didn't expect Livingston to be up there just now. I think they will drop a little bit. But, I mean, all credit to them. For me, I've always said that you get the points on the board as quick as you can. And albeit, while, like you say, it doesn't, 20 or 30 points doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be guaranteed safety. What it does do is they've already opened up a 12-point gap over Dundee. So you're looking at it going, well, over the season, do you expect Dundee to win 4 more games than Livingston? And the way the season started, you'd say that's probably doubtful. So, albeit you can't guarantee your safety in the first few months, but definitely if you go and pick up points, then you definitely put a little bit of breathing space, and it's going to have to be a pretty big collapse for them to finish at the bottom of the table now. They've already given themselves a little cushion, and like I say, well, I think they will drop down and teams start to figure out the way they play. It's going to take the likes of us and St Mirren and Dundee and Hamilton and St Johnson. We're going to have to win 5 or 6 games more than them to give us that to close that cushion again and get us back up that table. So I think that's the important thing with a Saturday as well, is that if Livingston beat us, I'm not sure, you'd maybe be able to tell me, but I think it would be something. I think they're on 13 points just now, potentially, and we're on 4. So they could potentially go 12 points ahead of us, which, like I say, is, yes, it's still early in the season, but
that's 4 wins. Yeah, I'm just actually checking the league table as we're talking. Livingston are on 14 points. We're in 4. So obviously, you would actually go 13 points ahead with the victory, Livingston on Saturday. So huge, huge match for us. And the Welsh Society, full credit to them, are clearly trying to drive supporters there, get a bigger crowd inside Fir Park. All Well Society members can claim a free ticket for the game. If you've got a season ticket, you can also still claim a ticket and take along a friend for free. So, plus that you've got to hope. It's a shame that Jay's not on to tell us a wee bit more about it, but clearly there's a motive there, and that's to get more bums in seats. And there's no better price than three, is there? So let's hope that it does entice a few along. I know the team aren't playing particularly well, but they certainly do need the backing of the fans at a difficult time. So hopefully this drive will work well. Livingston don't tend to travel very well in terms of numbers. So this, a game that was going to be fairly quiet in terms of attendance, has now been given a wee bit of a timely boost.
No, yeah, as you say, it's good to see them trying things like this. I think, though, you know, we've discussed it many a time. I think that we've got a sort of a core fan base, and it doesn't really change over the years. You know, if it does get a few extra 100 people through the gates, fair enough. I think, you know, generally, I think what's going to happen is here, people who maybe go to 60% of the games are going to get in for nothing because their mate's a member of the Well Society here. That, you know, again, I'm not having a go. I know I don't sound very positive about it, but it's good to see them trying to obviously encourage people through the doors. So you know, as you say, if you can bring along a pal who's maybe no been this season or no been for a month or two, you know, get them along, get them behind the team, because I think ultimately, you know, that's what the you know, the goal is, to get people behind the team. Maybe we play absolutely fantastic. It's a great game of football, and people get hooked. I wouldn't expect them to be, even if that happens, I wouldn't expect them to be looking for the same thing every week, because at the moment we're pretty fucking dire to watch. As I say, you know, it's a nice incentive, and hopefully, as you say, it does give us a wee boost on Saturday.
Nico, this is possibly an opportunity, given the bust has agreed with absolutely everything you've said for the duration of this podcast, to agree with him. It's a positive thing, isn't it? The Welsh Society, I think, at times don't deliver enough incentives for members, not enough rewards for members. Well, they certainly can't complain about that this week, because they can take a friend for free, or they can attend the game themselves for free.
I think you're maybe being a bit harsh on the Welsh Society there. I think they do genuinely try and promote a lot of things. They do a lot for the club. I'm obviously a member myself. I think nearly enough every member of my family is a member of the Welsh Society. And one thing I've always been keen on is, yes, it's great bringing a friend for free, but it's up to the fans to deliver on that. Like, you can offer so many incentives and all these little deals, but it's up to people to actually go out and use this to benefit. So, for example, I've in the past said to mates about going, they're like, oh no, I can't, I've got this on or that on, and it's about just saying, right, just come, just drag them along and get them to the game. And you never know, you might find that we might turn up on Saturday and we might win 4 or 5-0, and all of a sudden there's a little bit of a buzz back about the team. And I think one thing Motherwell has traditionally always been good at is when there is a big crowd, they tend to let us down. So it's maybe not a bad thing if we don't have a big crowd, but I think for me, one thing that's always been important is, instead of a big crowd, can it be a noisy crowd? Can it be one that gets behind the players, one that makes it as intimidating as possible for opposition teams and fans? And I think that's equally as important as the numbers. I think, yes, like Buster says, we're really only going to have that kind of 4,000, 5,000 max, but we've definitely seen an increase over the last maybe 2 or 3 seasons in the amount of home games that we are hitting, kind of over 4,000 home fans, which is great to see. And obviously with the deals that the team and the club now have, a lot of these fans probably are getting in, whether it's through the kids' Well Evate membership and things. I know a lot of people are getting in at basically at cost price or at no price at all. So, for me, I think the message should be that while these incentives are on, it's up to fans to actually utilise them and actually get people into the game. And the club are doing a lot of good stuff off the field just now in terms of the admin side, the media side, but you guys obviously speak about quite a lot. And I think there's all these little things that's happening off the field to help create that positivity around the club that I would love it if we could have 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 season ticket holders one season and really get Firth Park a place that's rocking and you're looking at a more than a half filled stadium. It would be great to see, but I think realistically it's always going to be difficult. But I would just encourage that, yeah, if there were people that haven't been to the game in a while, reach out to them. Just, and I think simple things like going back to, I know back home there's obviously been the epidemic with the a lot of kind of young suicides and things, and I know yourself and the club and the Well Boys in general have been trying to promote a better sense of mental health, and I'm not saying Mother, we're going to allow you to have a better mental health, but I think getting out and reaching out to people you've maybe not seen in a while, and you never know what people's circumstances are. They might just need a chance to get out for the day, and sometimes football with mates that you've maybe not seen in a while can provide that.
No, absolutely. I think it's a very, very good point, and something that kind of needs to be said. There's been fantastic work with the Community Trust and the Well Boys in recent weeks with the suicide awareness nights. And I think, to be honest, I think given the timing of them, it couldn't be more perfect. And it's good to see young guys getting along and educating themselves, because you never know when you can be of help to a friend. And it's a very special thing to see our support get behind such a fantastic initiative. So, yeah, well done to both the Well Boys and the Community Trust there. We'll talk about crowds again here, because we've congratulated the women's team on winning the SWPL 2 title. We've talked about the great success over the course of the season. Today was the trophy presentation day, and it was somewhat disappointing to see them not get a better crowd. It's free entry at Braidhurst to go and watch the team. It would be come next season, because they'll need certain stadia requirements, including a stand that holds 199 people. 199, because if it's 200 or more, you require stewarding. So obviously they've cut away a few corners there in terms of expense, but I'd say maybe 40 to 50 there to see the team collect the trophy, a Motherwell team winning a league title, a pretty special event, and it was something that was really nice to see. They weren't actually able to mark the occasion with a victory, the first time this season that they've not won at home. They've only dropped points on two occasions as well. But it's hard to know, Rico. I know in the States there's a much bigger profile in the women's game. I think it is growing in Britain. I think certainly the addition of the likes of Man United, and obviously teams like Arsenal have got a great history. Chelsea now and Man City are quickly catching up. The Scottish game is somewhat lagging behind, but you've got the national team now in a World Cup finals, something that the male side haven't been able to do for over 20 years now. The profile is building, but it's still a difficulty in terms of attracting punters. I know it's at a relatively early stage, but you would hope that the more people could get in the habit, or at least come along and try it out.
I think you're right. I think when you look at this season especially, the club have been very, very good at promoting where the games are, what time the games are at. And I think the club are working in tandem with the kind of the ladies' side very, very well. I think, like you say, it's a relatively new thing in Scotland and in Britain in general, really. I think, obviously, the exposure that the English Women's Premier League has is obviously greater than ours. I think ours will grow through the women's team, obviously, qualifying for the World Cup. Glasgow City are also in the last 16 of the Champions League, I believe. They beat Barcelona, not the Barcelona, a Barcelona from Cyprus, but they beat them last week. So they've obviously been kind of flying the flag for Scottish women's football for the last kind of 10, 15 years. I know Hibs and Celtic obviously have very strong women's teams as well. And I think it's about putting that out there about the game. And I think when you're affiliated to a club, it's you're looking for fans to kind of get behind it and link with it, I think it's a completely different sport, if I'm honest, and it's different for fans because there's no pathway for me. There's no like pathway through youth development. There's no kind of set women's team or girls teams and a strong girls pathway that players can go from a young age through into kind of the women's team and then look for a pathway into the Scottish team. Whereas I think for me here in the States, it's huge, especially amongst girls players. I work with girls teams in football. And for my age or for our age group at U16, there's four teams at our age group at our club, each with probably around 16 players. So you're looking at 60 under 16 girls players for our club alone. You times that by, say, six or seven other big clubs. So you're looking at around 300 players who play what they call club soccer. So they travel maybe like an hour to games and things. Underneath that, you've then got a rec program, a recreational program, which has got probably another 400, 500, 600 players. So overall, you're probably looking at, for the age of U16 alone, you could easily have around 400, 500 girls soccer players around Metro Atlanta, or around the Atlanta area. And obviously, I know population's a lot different here, but there seems to be an attitude towards it's a game that girls can play and should play and do play. I think we're still setting our times a little bit back home in that there's a little bit of, oh no, girls shouldn't be playing football, which is absolutely absurd in my opinion. I wouldn't even say there's a large quality difference. I went to work when I was working with North Lanarkshire Leisure back home. We worked at Ravenscraig one of the days, and it was the girls' kind of football tournament from different schools, and there were six or seven different schools there. And some of the games was excellent. And some of these girls were with kind of Hamilton Accies youth and Rangers youth. And as I say, the quality was really, really good. I think it will grow. I think the World Cup qualification for the women definitely allows the game a chance to build upon something. And I think that's kind of been missing. We've not had that yet. So I definitely hope that through qualifying, I know the government have recently given the women's game some funding as well, which is obviously quite important because I know that there's a lack of funding in the game. But I think hopefully that's given them a platform to build on, basically just promoting the game, but also for job opportunities. That's a little hint for me there. But I'm hoping that there is a platform that the women's game can build on back home, because I see the benefit it has out here for even just socially for girls to be playing sport. Back home, you used to always get, when girls get to kind of 14, 15, 16 at high school, they stop participating in sport, and it's got a large effect on for me, the social aspect of sport. So I see the big difference out here and kind of social aspects for girls at the age of 15, 16 who are still actively participating in sport. So I hope, as I say, I hope there is a kind of promotion in the game back home.
A lot of good points there, Buster. I think having Penny at the game today, that's the first time I've actually taken her along. And you can see that she looks up to these girls on the park. It's you can almost see a wee bit of yourself in them in terms of that. And that's a great thing that younger girls won't get going to watch the male side, because obviously they're never going to have that opportunity to turn out for the Motherwell men's team. So it's a good thing that I think there's a real family element to it, and that's how it needs to be promoted for me. There's a real family feel. It's not got the somewhat boisterous nature of the men's game, but I think technically it's very good. I think the physical element is getting there. A lot of good goals, a lot of quality play on display. So it's just a case of people giving it a try, I suppose. There's no miracle cure, and it's certainly not going to command the crowds that you get at men's games in Scottish football, but it certainly could improve. And I noticed as well BBC Alba showing Glasgow City against Celtic today. They've got another couple of games towards the end of the season, so that will only help. There's a massive game coming up for the women's team. They play Spartans at Forth Bank Stadium 2 weeks today, with a place of the Scottish Cup final at stake. It would be a quite incredible achievement from a side in the second division, if you will, reaching a final, and they would go up against either Hibs or Glasgow City if they were to beat Spartans. So,
is that our home game, Andy?
No, it's a Forth Bank.
Is it classed as our home game, or is it a neutral venue?
It's a neutral venue. Both semi-finals are played on the same day, which will lead us on nicely to what we're going to talk about next. But
controversial.
Yeah, it's a kind of Super Sunday, if you will, in terms of you can go along to Forth Bank for a fiver and watch Glasgow City versus Hibs first, and then Muddle versus Spartans following that. So a great platform to generate some interest there.
Can you imagine, I can't even
remember whether I actually asked you a question there, Buster. Sorry, what was that?
I was just going to say, can you imagine all the riots at that? Four different clubs playing at the same venue? Chaos.
Right, okay, well, we'll go into it right now then. The Betfred Cup scheduling, it has been a major talking point in Scottish football this week, and we might as well join in on it as well, because given we've got you on, Rico, I know that you're for the idea. I personally think it's a pretty horrendous idea. I think just in a logistics sense, I think that it'll be very difficult for Aberdeen fans getting down for a noon kickoff. Something they have to do quite often. I know if they get to cup finals or cup semi-finals, that is often a challenge, having to travel to Glasgow. That's something that the fans do in reasonable numbers and quite often. I know when Celtic and Rangers go to Aberdeen, it's quite often an early kickoff as well. So there's two sides to it. Logistics, obviously, clearing the stadium, travel is an issue. You'll then have the Celtic and Hearts fans arriving. I don't think there's any doubt that there could be quite a lot of Hearts and Celtic fans in and around Hampden Park for the early kickoff. So there's going to be a lot of congestion, put it that way. But I take it your idea is that it'll be a massive day to showcase Scottish football for. Good sides in it, four sides that are doing well. It'll certainly be an entertaining day, but I think the police and the authorities could have a few headaches in their hands.
Yeah, I'm evidently very much in the minority of thinking that this is a good idea. And maybe, do you know what? Who knows? Maybe I've been out here too long, but I'm looking at it from the point of a kind of marketing point of view, in that I just feel as if it's a very, very good opportunity for Scottish football to showcase four of the top teams in the country, as much as it pains me to say that, with two full house, I would imagine, two full attendances for both games. And I just think it's a little bit of innovation that the SPFL and the SFA and basically anybody who's got any sort of decision to make within Scottish football hasn't shown in the past 5-10 years. I think it's something a little bit outside the box. Whether they've made the decision for the right reasons or not, then who knows, because I'm not the greatest fan of Neil Doncaster. I don't think I've ever hidden that. But I think this is just something a little bit different that allows us to promote the game in a different way. We know we're never going to compete with the riches that's on offer in the English Premier League or even the leagues below that. I think there was a recent kind of graphic showing that even the Bundesliga, Serie A and La Liga are like absolutely miles behind the English Premier League as well. So we're never going to catch up with that. But I think we need to try and be innovative to sell our game in a unique way that other leagues can or don't. And I kind of touched on it recently on social media with the Rugby League Magic Weekend and in the MLS they have a kind of rivalry weekend. Now the rivalry weekend's a little bit different in that it's not in the same stadium. So one thing I just think they do is they market their game a lot better. And I have never been a fan of kind of moving kickoffs and moving games for television. I'm still very much against that whole kind of modern football idea of fans being put second. But on this occasion, I just feel as if it's at a time where our game is on the up, and we could create a lot of interest from the outside of Scotland, from international markets, different TV companies. I feel as if it's something we should really be looking to push and promote, that our game is trying these different things. And you, for me, I would imagine the TV cameras will be at Hampden for the full day, and there's probably going to be a 5 or 6 hour coverage of live Scottish football on that day. So for me, that can only be a good thing. I completely understand the whole travel arrangements with Aberdeen. I don't envy them at all. I've been a massive kind of campaigner on kickoff times and ticket prices in the past, and we've had to travel up to Aberdeen numerous Wednesday evenings over the past few seasons, and it's no fun, and it isn't fair because people want to travel to games and they can't. I did see an interesting point on social media recently, however, suggesting, well, why can we not change the transport links? Which for me was a valid point. Why can we not, with weeks or months to go before the game, why can we not put on a train or two trains for fans, specifically for football fans, for this occasion? I don't understand why that's so difficult for the authorities to negotiate and put in place for the game. And like you say, I think the police are probably going to have their hands full. I hope the game passes without any disturbances. More so because I don't want the police to be able to turn around and say, I told you so, and push us back 10, 15 years. And I would really hope that the game goes all to plan, and it kickstarts the kind of fan campaigns of things like allowing alcohol back into stadiums, safe standing in stadiums. I think this could be a trigger that allows Scottish football fans the chance to show that they can be trusted with these different perks. And like I say, I think it's an opportunity for Scottish football to showcase itself and show the kind of good of the game. And you're going to have two noisy games, two atmospheres that are probably, we joked about it recently, Rangers out with Celtic, they're probably biggest rivals at Aberdeen still, and Celtic and Hearts are no friends either. So you're probably going to have two of the best atmospheres that we can deliver in the league. So it's something to promote. I'd imagine, like I say, there'll be large singing sections in the stadium, so the atmosphere should be good. I get that fans are going to be kind of mingling with each other, but I think knowing the police kind of tactics from the past, I'm quite sure they'll have all claimed their overtime for this, and there'll be plenty of them on the streets on the day.
But I think it's a surprising one, given the lack of trust in Scottish football fans. Rico already mentioned alcohol ban in Scottish stadia. You've also got the situation where you've got two rival clubs coming together. I think the main concern is revolving around the Rangers and the Celtic fans here, but there's two games here that are involving rival sides. Aberdeen and Rangers, no love lost there. And Celtic Hearts is also a fiercely contested game, and a lot of hatred, a bit of history there in terms of, you think about the fan attacking Neil Lennon and things like that. So hostility will be quite high. I just think it's a very surprising move, given they clearly have a lack of respect and a lack of trust in Scottish football fans.
I can see both arguments, to be honest with you. The obviously the main concern, as you mentioned, is the fans. I don't think that when Motherwell go to Hampden, for example, you make a day of it. No matter what time, you know, the kickoff is, whether it be 12 or 3, you know, you go to the surrounding areas after the game. You maybe go to one of the local pubs and stay in there for 3 or 4 hours. That can't really happen. You know, there'll be people who, I don't know what game the early kickoff is, but, you know, there'll be people who might go to the pub after the early kickoff. And you know what's going to happen there? Are the police going to sweep the area and tell whoever it is, Hearts fans or Rangers fans or Celtic fans, that they then have to leave the surrounding areas? So I don't really know how it works. It's generally just shite for Aberdeen coming down there for
quarter past 12 kickoffs or whatever it is, because I think that's happened to them the last few times they've played at Hampden. You know, so it's generally just a bit shite for the fans. But I really don't know how they get around that, considering the Rangers and Celtic are in Europe. There's fixtures other weekends. If for example there's a free midweek, that's maybe your best bet, move one of the games to then. But I don't think they have any intentions of moving the games now they've said it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there is any developments at the start of the week. I think it's fair to say there's been a fair bit of backlash, but at the same time, I think they're that stubborn. I don't see many possibilities. And you'll also have the fact that, despite the fact that football fans will often moan about things and the inconvenience of it all, we're also mugs. We'll go to lengths to make sure we get to follow our team. I think there's quite a big influence in BT Sport here as well, who have... It's all good and well, we'll be able to sit and watch two League Cup semi-finals. I'd much prefer being in one of them, but it's for the punter that's actually going to the game, it's inconvenienced here rather than the television audience who will enjoy it. And I think the numbers will be very, very strong. But it's just not ideal in any way for punters having to shell out. And there'll be a lot of Aberdeen fans and a lot of Rangers fans as well, I would imagine, travelling over from Northern Ireland or wherever, in terms of having to put yourself up the night before, maybe stay the night after as well, depending on the Sunday transport options. But I suppose you would argue that it's not a problem that they're unfamiliar with, but it almost seems somewhat of a punishment for reaching a semi-final, which certainly shouldn't be the case. You should never be setting your alarm clock to wake up for a semi-final. I think that's pretty ridiculous, to be honest. And I thought exactly the same when Aberdeen played Motherwell in the Scottish Cup semi-final back in April. I just don't think it's right. But we'll wrap this up just now, because I think the sound issues we've experienced over the course has been a wee bit frustrating for us all. I'm sorry that you've experienced this on your debut. We've really picked up our game in terms of sound in recent times, Rico, but unfortunately we've taken a few steps back tonight.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. Maybe it's my fault. I'll take the hit. I'll take the blame and I'll save the podcast reputation.
No, this is just what happens when Jay's not here. Everything falls to bits, but so we'll blame Jay. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and thanks, Buster, as well. I do really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Well, thanks very much, Rico. I know.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it, and obviously you guys will get to see the well a little bit more than me, so I can only imagine how frustrated you are actually watching it rather than just watching a score come through on Twitter now and again.
Yeah, it's not been a great week to be a Motherwell supporter, but hopefully we can turn it around on Saturday. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following the Livingston game next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Yeah.